From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made with a word. The word of the year, that is. An annual tradition for various dictionaries is to choose a quote-unquote word of the year. And this year, Merriam-Webster chose a word that surprised some people. It's a basic term, a word I'm sure you've used. It's a pronoun. And it quickly rose to the top of the list. And that happened as it's become the subject of, as Merriam-Webster says, increasing study and commentary. That word is they. Lookups for they increased 313% this year as compared to last year, and its use as a pronoun for people whose gender identity is non-binary becomes more common. Revising and adding to the dictionary is ongoing and constant work, but the tireless folks at Merriam-Webster, Oxford, and other dictionaries are tracking language as it changes. Looking at the words that were added to the dictionaries this year can paint a picture of who and where we are as a society. Words like they, political words like deep state and red flag laws. A new sense and listing of the word inclusive was also added to the Merriam-Webster pages. This hour, we talk about the dictionary's annual tradition. We also celebrate our own, the annual Connections New Words in the Dictionary quiz, which I am very excited about. We'll have some fun with our guests, but we'll also test you, our listeners, about your knowledge of new words. And we'll have a conversation about how and why language changes. So, relax, sit back for what I hope will be an inspo sesh. I'd like to welcome my guests. Maya Abtakian is an assistant professor in the Department of Linguistics at the University of Rochester. Always nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Amanda Chestnut is here, an artist, curator, educator, and administrator. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Chris Fanning is here. Against my better judgment,
just pick it up. For a whole hour.
He's the director of communications for Writers and Books. They have been here, I think, nearly every year we've done this quiz, so it's fun to have them back. They're already very competitive, so listeners, make sure you get out your papers and pens, and you can join in as well. But first, let's talk about the words of the year. Well, there are multiple words of the year. Different dictionaries have chosen different words. But let's start with they, which was the choice of Merriam-Webster. Chris, thoughts on they? Do you support the choice of they? Do you think it was a good addition?
Absolutely. I was not shocked to hear that that was chosen as the top word of the year. I think with everything that's been going on in our social climate and our political climate, that is a term that has risen to be inclusive, and it's not just a smart use of it, but it's safe. It's a safe word to say, you know, to an entire group. Hey, they, you, they. So I fully support it. I think it was easily enough put into my vernacular just by using it in conversation. So, yeah, yay for they.
I'm glad you mentioned that because the Associated Press, it was hanging on for years of using they as a singular for grammatical purposes. They faced so much criticism for that. And so in 2017, they allowed reporters and copy editors to use they as a singular form.
Sure.
And this is what they said. I found this very interesting. We stress that it's usually possible to write around that, one of the editors said. But we offer new advice for two reasons. Recognition that the spoken language uses they as singular. And we also recognize the need for a pronoun to people who don't identify as a he or she.
First of all, the Associated Press also doesn't like the Oxford comma. So
we
already have problems.
Oh, no. I've got to make a phone call after this.
Did you forget that part?
Yes,
oops.
I did.
Oops. I really think that this is the word they being like the word of the year is actually indicative of English catching up to other languages. Mm-hmm. I think that it's
That's
one of the
point.
Spaces where English is so prone to binary that we haven't really had a lot of space.
Yes.
And socially, we've adapted for that. But linguistically, I think English has been really, really slow because there's lots of other cultures all around the world, including in the United States, where there already is either a gender neutral or third gender term prevalent in the language.
Maya, did the choice of they surprise you?
No, it didn't surprise me at all. And I'm very happy that it was chosen. Although the fact that, I mean, I think the fact that it had to be chosen really reflects this emphasis on written language, not spoken language, right? I mean, it's been around in spoken language for centuries. So actually, this is just a change in how newspaper, the Associated Press, for example, is being prescriptive about language, but it's been around, right?
Right.
And it happened to be, so, I mean, yeah. with that.
I think I read 600 years. I was reading about it earlier.
Yes, I saw that somewhere, that we've been using it.
So let's pretend I didn't tell you what the year of the word was. What would you have predicted or what would you have wanted the year of the word to be, Maya?
Oh, man, this is tough.
This is where I keep, this is where I fail the quiz, right?
We're not even in it yet.
The quiz hasn't even started yet,
we haven't even played
Maya.
The theme music.
I remember last year I said Nothing Burger.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
yes,
yes.
And I have seen it pop up, but it is definitely not the word for 2019.
Mine was Hive Mind last year. That's what I rooted for. Yeah, which that was probably the last time I used it. No, okay. Boy, for this year, though, I don't know. I need to come back at the end. Maybe we'll come up with this.
We can ask that question with different categories, too. Mm-hmm. That makes it a little easier. But Amanda, I know you've been tweeting about a certain word when it comes to birds. And I've tried to understand why. But let's talk about it. And that actually may have some historical meaning behind it, which we can check with Maya about. But tell us about the burb.
The burb. Burb's the word.
I'm just going to let you do that one. Yeah.
So burb is, for me, I think, the rise of words like burb and chonky and all of these animal descriptors is actually, for me, kind of indicative of our desperate need for escapism in our social engagements, that we love to look at pictures of cute, fluffy, round birds and call them burbs instead. Oh. And that there's this wide understanding in NetSpeak that I'm just going to look at burbs. I don't want to look at ostriches or eagles or things that are going to tear me apart, but tiny little robins or little thrushes that are just cute and fluffy and maybe doing cute things, and that there's an entire NetSpeak that's developed around that cuteness,
like Doge, right? Mm-hmm. The whole
doggo
meme, yeah.
Doggos, doggos and burbs and cattos, and there's a whole meme speak NetSpeak that's evolved, and I think it really speaks to our need for this escapism and cuteness.
Huh. I want to ask Maya about that because we'll be talking a lot about how language changes and why, and Maya, is there any staying power in something like, I mean, we've seen slang stick around for a long time, so much so that some of those words have been added to the dictionary. When it's more meme-based, do you think that we're heading in the direction as a culture where this is going to be part of vocabulary consistently?
I suspect some of them will and some of them won't. Just like, I think some of the things, one of the things that's interesting is the patterns that stick around. Like, burb definitely has to be fluffy, right? It can't be a cute little skinny thing.
Nope.
Because vowels, when you have that oo or o vowel in it, it's got to be fat and chubby. And whereas if it's e, then it can be small and cute, right? So some of those things that stick around, I think. But for the actual words, it kind of remains to be seen.
The reason I bring up the historical context is because, and we've talked about this on a previous show, the word bird used to be known as brid. Correct, Maya? So was it a mispronunciation, or how did it change from brid to bird, and what happened there?
So it was bridda with a bridda. Final schwa, like you see that final e that you see that we still have in a lot of words, but we don't pronounce it. So both of those are common types of sound changes where the last sound gets lost, or where you get that kind of, you know, the we call it metathesis, the switching of the two sounds, like nuclear and nuclear.
This show is always so fascinating because I learned so much.
I do too.
Yeah.
We can talk about some of the other words of the year. Mm-hmm. Dictionary.com chose existential.
Yes.
Oxford chose climate emergency. The Collins Dictionary, published in Scotland, chose climate strike. A dictionary in Australia chose cancel culture. So a lot of very culture-based words, words of the moment. I guess that's appropriate with words of the year. And how do you feel about some of these choices in terms of, do you feel like they're purposefully selected to draw conversation, or is this genuinely, this term has been used so often that it is our choice?
I feel like as far as the two, I forget what the sources were that chose climate emergency and climate crisis?
Climate strike.
Climate strike. That those are as much probably based off of data that is collected on people looking those things up, but also to drive home that this conversation, that this is a word that is important, that has power, that needs focus around it, and to continue conversation using that word and synonyms of those words. So it's not shocking to me that there were two culture, climate, based choices there. But also existential, I think, is interesting. You can have an existential crisis. You can, you know, think existentially. So there's a lot of different ways to take that term, positive and negative. So that probably expands its use and its lookup on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maya, Amanda, any thoughts on those other words of the year?
I was also wondering if those lists are maybe compiled with an eye towards history. Hmm. So if we look back in a decade and see what were the top words of 2019, that we also have a reflection on what was in the cultural milieu at that time, even if the words weren't super popular and used with high frequency, they're indicative of a broader social structure.
Mm-hmm. Where we are at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Maya, go ahead.
Oh, so at the annual American Dialect Society Word of the Year vote, that often comes up.
Are you part of that society?
Yes.
Do you all like wear robes and you come into a room and it's like wizarding court, you know?
They have powdered wigs.
Word wizards.
It's very democratic process.
Okay, all right.
And that often comes up, right? So there's usually a list of 20 words or so that people are picking from. They're picking one word of the year or voting for one word of the year from that list. And there's a lot of there are a lot of people who would like to vote for something that actually that captures a historical moment. Mm. And then there are always a group of people who are angling for some word that's actually a brand new word that we haven't had before.
Okay.
Or that's a new use of the word, right? So one of the recent, in 2013, I think, the use of because, like because internet was voted the word of the year, which was really a brand new way of using because, which it hadn't been used before. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where it didn't have to introduce a whole clause. You could just introduce a verb or an adjective.
And it kind of has like a punchy ending. Like, I'm not having an argument or a conversation with you about this.
Right.
And, you know,
because
procrastination.
Yeah.
There is no
because
room
life.
For conversation there. Because life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So how do you vote, Maya? Where do your preferences lie in terms of what you think should be considered for words of the year? Where are your criteria?
I usually lean toward the ones that are some new use of a word and something that I think might have some staying power. I often find that when I look back, the ones that I think were chosen for to capture some historical moment are not the ones that stick around.
Mm.
But I don't know if that's completely true. That's just my impression.
Do you collect these words all year? Do you have like a note in your phone where you're like potential word of the year?
Yes, people do. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's fun.
The votes come in all year.
Oh,
the nominations, I should say. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Well, we're starting to hear from our listeners. So let's take a couple phone calls before we start our quiz. I see our guests studying right now.
Going over
talk
our
about
notes.
Because procrastination. So up first on the phone is Elaine in Rochester. Go ahead.
Hi. It's an evolution question, and I don't know that it would ever qualify as word of the year. Do you have any thoughts about where on accident is coming from instead of by accident? Because personally, it irritates the living daylights out of me.
Okay, thanks, Elaine. We'll turn that over to, I think, Maya, probably.
I've noticed its use. I can't say that I know where it's coming from. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know the origin of it. I'm sure the internet can tell us. And while we're doing this, go.
We have an excellent person on research today, Gary Puttup, who may be already looking this up for us. So we will come back to your question, Elaine, once we have a little more information. So we'll come back to on accident, by accident. Hmm. And in the meantime, I believe, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for our quiz. Hit the music, Rob. Okay, it's Family Feud music, but I love Family Feud music, so I'm hosting today. I do whatever I want.
Because hosting.
Because hosting. Because short staffed. So, now listeners, if you want to play along at home, this is a multiple choice quiz.
in which we're using new words from the dictionary. These all come from Merriam-Webster, so there's a little cheat for you if you want to play along and have some resources at home. But we'll just, I have four different questions. I'm going to read them to our guests. They're going to give their answers. Maya says that she's ready to lose this year, but come on. Come on.
No way.
I'm going to try.
You're in the Powdered Wigs Foundation. You're going to, whatever that society's called. Okay, question number one. Isabel had had a tough year. Her coworkers were nice people, but their red noses and big shoes terrified her, especially Pennywise. Fortunately, the ringmaster said he'd help her find a new position under the big top that wouldn't trigger her A, bottle episode, B, geosmin, C, chlorophobia, D, pain point. Isabel had a tough year working with clowns. Her boss said, I'm going to help you. So you are not triggered. So your blank is not triggered. Is her blank a bottle episode, geosmin, chlorophobia, pain point? Maya.
I have no idea. I'm going to go with pain point.
Pain point. Chris.
I'm going to go with C, chlorophobia.
Okay. Amanda.
I'm going with C too. It's a guess.
Amanda and Chris, 1 point each for you. Chlorophobia, abnormal fear of clowns. It's a fairly recent invention, coined perhaps as enough grown-ups have found that they were not alone in lingering childhood queasiness over exposure to big people dressed like Bozo, according to Merriam-Webster.
Mm-hmm.
Maya, hang in there. I have faith in you. The other words, bottle episode, an inexpensively produced episode of television that is typically confined to one setting. TV series.
Love
like
it.
Cheers.
Yes.
Mm, in general. Geosmin, you guys know that one?
I don't.
This was brand new to me. From the science of smell, this word comes from a chemical element in the recognizable odor of recent rainfall.
Oh. There's a word for that.
Well, and there's lots of words.
That
for
word
lots
is
of things.
Petrichor, the recent rainfall smell. And then pain point, a persistent or reoccurring problem that frequently inconveniences or annoys customers.
Hmm.
So not a bad guess. Not a bad guess.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Question number two. Isabel's brother, Dwayne, is a solopreneur in the gig economy. He has never had a day off. In 2020, he's hoping he can find some time to A, go on vacay, B, free solo, C, have a Bechdel test, D, play pickleball. Isabel's brother, Dwayne, works a lot. He's hoping next year to have time to A, go on vacay, B, free solo, C, have a Bechdel test, D, play pickleball. Amanda.
I believe that it is A, although if he's really hard for cash, he might settle for D instead.
All right, she's going with A, go on vacay. Chris?
I say A, but he may also do B with his free time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Going with A, maybe B. Maya?
I'm tempted to go with D, but I'm very curious that you can earn money doing this. Pickleball?
Well, it's just something to do other than going on vacay.
Got it.
Well, guess what? You're all right, because this was a trick question.
Oh, okay.
Go on vacay, of course, abbreviated for go on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Free solo, also correct, a climb in which a rock climber uses no artificial aids for support and has no rope or other safety equipment for protection in case of a fall. C, have a Bechdel test. Do you guys want to weigh in on Bechdel test? I didn't know this
it's
one either.
It's something with television, isn't it?
Isn't it the how female characters interact with main characters?
Very close. A set of criteria used as a test to evaluate the work of fiction on the basis of its inclusion and representation of female characters. Nice. And then pickleball, which surprised me that it was just added now.
Yeah.
Pickleball has been around. I mean, this isn't new this year, but it is... I think it is now like frolfing, maybe. It is catching up. It is becoming frolfing?
No.
Oh. This frisbee is... golf?
Oh.
Frisbee golf, I've heard. Frolfing
I didn't know it had a word.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh. It's a thing. It's a, you know, an actual sports league, frolfing. Yeah.
Hmm.
Most parks have, frolfing courses on them. I hope my family is enjoying this because they all love to frolf and I don't, but I know about it. So there you go.
That might be a bonus point.
Oh, well, I'll just take
if I'm feeling
point.
Generous, then, oh, he's actually keeping score over there.
Don't mind if I do.
Okay, question three. Yikes, irresponsible Dwayne took too much vacay to play pickleball, so now his business is failing. He says his company's valuation suffered from a big A, stinger, B, haircut, C, fatberg, D, garbage time. Dwayne didn't work enough. His company's valuation suffered from a big A, stinger, B, haircut, C, fatberg, D, garbage time. Chris, it's your turn to go first.
I'm going to go with B, haircut.
Okay. Amanda?
I have seen photos of fatbergs, and I hope I never do again. So I'm going to go with haircut as well.
Haircut. Maya?
Fatberg is one of my favorite new words, just because it's such a lovely portmanteau that perfectly captures what it is.
Yes.
But I'm going to have to go with haircut also.
You are all correct. Points for everyone. Chris, mark it down.
Okay, got it.
Everybody got haircut, which means a reduction in the value of an asset. Very good. Stinger, the name for a short scene that appears during or after the closing credits of a movie. Fatberg. Why don't you tell our listeners about fatbergs? That was new to me when I was making this quiz yesterday. Amanda, Maya.
Oh, no.
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 People
no.
might still be eating lunch.
Yeah,
come
it's
on.
True.
Oh. I can read the definition.
Do it.
Yeah,
do
let's
it.
Go with that.
Okay. You can Google your own, do your own Google image search on
don't
your
do
own
that.
Time.
No, don't do that.
A large mass of fat and solid waste that collects in a sewer system.
There you have it.
Cool.
Now, I like Stinger that you mentioned, mm-hmm. the scene within the credits or just at the end. And I was thinking, of course, that's one of the words of 2019. Marvel has made this one of their, you know, trademark things in the closings of all of their films that you wait around for this, you know, 2.5 minute, not even, probably a minute scene that's going to set up so many other things. So I thought that was a fabulous add to the list this year.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Garbage time, was that new to anyone? I think I'm the only one that doesn't
I don't
know
what
these
that
new
is.
Words.
I don't know that
is garbage time just like when you're doing something that's, it's not procrastinating, but it's a waste of your abilities?
Like wasted time?
Yeah.
I think that's a good, that's what I would have guessed too, but it's the final moments or minutes of a game in which one side has an insurmountable lead.
Oh.
The four people who would not know that, I think.
I should have known that. I feel like I've watched enough football to know that one.
Okay.
Mona on Twitter says, ew, regarding Fatberg.
Yes.
Getting some
She's
feedback on the Fatberg. Question four, it's our final question. Chris, what are the scores right now?
Right now, I, with my bonus point, am at
I
four.
I have not awarded the bonus point officially.
I've got Amanda at 3 and Maya with 2.
Okay. You're okay,
I'm
Maya.
Still in the running.
You're still in the running. All right. Question four. It's very serious. Now, both Isabel and Dwayne are both pretty stressed out. Since they're Lizzo stans, they decide to go see her perform. The show was A, buzzy, B, swole, C, sesh, D, EGOT. Isabel and Dwayne are Lizzo stans. They go to her concert. The show was A, buzzy, B, swole, C, sesh, D, EGOT.
Okay.
Chris.
I'm going to go with A, buzzy.
Okay.
A
for Amanda.
I don't really know what B, swole means, but I'm also going to have to go with A.
Okay. You are all correct. Well done. Oh, buzzy.
Yeah.
Causing or characterized by a lot of speculative or excited talk or attention generating buzz. Nice. Good job. Mm-hmm. I feel embarrassed to say this, but I had to ask my coworker yesterday what stans meant. I am totally out of the...
We
I watch a lot
just,
of Golden Girls, so
we were
I'm not...
conversing
I'm behind
about
the, times.
The word stan and yeah. how I have a general distaste for it.
Oh, why is that? So tell us what it means.
So stan currently means like a super fan, somebody who is really engaged and over the top, loves the person that they're admiring or fanning for. However, the root of the word is from an Eminem song where Stan stalks and murders his girlfriend, which is not the type of way I like
it's,
to
yeah,
use
obsession,
language.
Obsession, I think, is a close word to describe.
It's an unhealthy obsession in its root, though.
Now, see, I
like,
see
murder is unhealthy.
I see it a lot in we stan, like more
oh,
in the
okay.
sense of it being a verb than a noun. So the act of backing someone, being behind them, you know, following their every move. We stan Lizzo or something like that. That's my...
A verb or a noun.
Yeah.
Our engineer Rob says he stan about Arsenal soccer.
Okay. Yes. Good. Mm-hmm. Great.
There we go. Did you know that word, Maya?
I knew the word, and I had heard about that it came from the Eminem song, but I'd forgotten that. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, that is an example of the type of thing that happens, of course, is that some of the meaning gets lost along the way.
True.
Or it changes.
Well, when did Stan come out? I mean, that's a fascinating question.
Early aughts?
Right.
Yeah, this is a long time coming,
that
it, and it is now... I mean, how does that happen, Maya?
When did the phrase rule of thumb come out? I still don't use that one either.
Which one?
When did the phrase rule of thumb come out? I don't use that one either. So just because it is popular doesn't mean that we need to use it.
Truth. True. Right. Yeah.
Hmm.
On accident.
We do have an answer, Elaine, so we'll get back to you about that in a few minutes.
It's not far from my head.
On accident brainstorm I was wondering about. Is it AAVE?
I'm sorry?
Is on accident instead of by accident?
Oh, I haven't read the full message yet. Gary's very thorough, so I need a moment. Stan came out in 2000, he says.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll get back to the accident question. Swole, sesh, EGOT?
Swole is like lifting weights, right?
That's very muscular.
You getting yourself swole, beefing up. Yes.
So Chris Fanning.
Totally. You can't see it, listener, so but I can hardly fit my muscles in this shirt. I can't even say it without laughing. I'm sorry.
Sesh?
Is that a session?
Yeah, abbreviation for session. And the last one, it's spelled EGOT, all in caps.
Now, EGOT is... Unless it's the... It's not
Emmy,
the...
Emmy, Oscar,
Grammy,
Tony, and...
Grammy.
Grammy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only like a handful of people who have accomplished this.
John Legend is an EGOT?
Maybe Whoopi Goldberg?
This question is not on the quiz.
Oh, sorry.
And it's also time for our theme music. Rob, hit the theme. We have a winner, Chris Fanning, who has won.
5 points with my bonus point that I'm keeping.
Which I never awarded. Chris Fanning, Amanda Chestnut, Maya Abtakian, thank you for playing, as always, every year. As we do our postmortem of the quiz, which took longer than you may have thought to put together. I'm wondering which of these words you think will stick around in earnest. I mean, we can talk about slang from the 1920s, I think is a fun example. The cat's meow, the bee's knees, whatever.
Love it.
You know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. We say it kind of in a cheeky way these days, but back then it was really taken seriously.
Yes.
How many of these words do you think will be taken seriously consistently going forward?
I mean, taken seriously is kind of a funny term because...
I guess I should say consistently used.
Yeah, yeah. Because I would think some of these abbreviations are in their very nature kind of silly to say the, you know, vacay. I'm going on vacay.
We know they're silly when we use them.
Right, yes.
We hope.
I don't know. I'd be fascinated, Maya, what your thoughts are on that, about staying power of not just slang, but of some of these other words that are timely. And, you know, are they cemented in our vocabulary because of where they are in history, or is it because of their relevance in common communication with ourselves, with each other?
I think that's a hard thing to predict.
Sure. I don't know. Clown phobia, I don't know. Like, is that going to be have sticking power, or is that just go into the...
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I think one thing that helps is if there aren't other words for that concept.
Right.
And the concept sticks around, right? Mm-hmm. So fatberg might be a word that we hear more and more.
Ugh. Yes.
But there's no other word for that. And also, I think how transparent it is also helps, right? Mm-hmm. So something like, so sesh is pretty transparent. Vacay is pretty transparent. The ones that we could guess off the list.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the, like EGOT is a little less transparent. But if it sticks around in certain circles and then spreads beyond that, you know, which often happens, right? So you talked about AAVE. Mm-hmm. Any sports groups, culture groups, minority groups, right? That tends to be where language change starts, and then eventually it spreads into the broader community.
There were a number of political words or politically based words on the list, excuse me, from Merriam-Webster this year. Deep state being one, red flag law another one. I'm wondering, Maya, why these words are in, they're more like phrases or descriptors. Why are they in the dictionary?
Yes.
Is that an ignorant question? I apologize if that's an ignorant question.
I just don't have a good answer for it. I think, so. I mean, not being a dictionary writer, I think one of the things that they do is try to, I mean, of course, it doesn't mean the same thing. So cancel culture, for example, was one of the ones that came up. And there's already a word cancel in the dictionary, and there's already a word culture. But when you put them together, they mean something different. So I think when there's that kind of change where you have an idiom or a new compound, they probably want to capture that and have it in the dictionary.
Okay.
That's my
guess. Sort of like a sub-listing, then.
Yeah.
Okay. The word inclusive has a new sense that's been added to the dictionary. Quote, allowing and accommodating people who have historically been excluded as because of their race, gender, sexuality, or ability. So that's another Merriam-Webster addition. Oxford English Dictionary added in October the phrase angry white man, which we've had a conversation about on the show, a local business trainer used the hashtag angry white man. It's described by Oxford as a white man with right-wing or reactionary views. These are just all responses to culture, which I suppose is the point in making these selections.
Right.
And I know we've talked about this on the show before, but I have to remind myself every year how the process works, how a word is chosen, how they're monitoring words all year long. Maya, do you want to jump in on how they do that outside of the society that you're a member of? But how do the dictionaries actually sit and monitor all these?
I think they read a lot. Mm-hmm. And I actually think they do probably more reading than listening, but they're doing both. And they're tracking on Google what kinds of words are popular and trying to get all different kinds of literature in what they're reading. Just to collect as many words as they can.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners would like to know if they can submit a word for consideration.
Ooh, like for word of the
year? To be added to the dictionary.
Oh.
Yeah. I think I read something about Merriam-Webster listening, but they have their own team. I'll have to look through my notes. But is that something you're familiar with, Maya? Do they accept
in the dictionary? I don't know how they – I don't know.
We're on it. Gary. Get out,
I feel
Gary.
Like, in years past, we have talked about this and that maybe there is some sort of forum or submission process that the public can make a plea or make a stand for a word to be added in.
It probably depends on the dictionary.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking specifically just Webster, but
Urban Dictionary you can self-submit to.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we don't
and
even
sure
talk
the
about
other
Urban Dictionary. Like that's
makers read it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that I go to Urban Dictionary before I even open Google. I mean,
anytime
I have it on my phone and that's
hashtag,
what I use.
Please check Urban Dictionary.
Please be careful driving out there on social media. Please just look up your hashtags on Urban Dictionary. I beg.
Oxford has a 5-person team of word researchers who spend their days analyzing databases, tracking collections of words, and they try to determine which words are the most frequently used. The group also judges reader submissions for inclusion. These are things I put in my own notes and forgot. So they spend most of their time studying massive electronic text databases for words that pop up more and more in common use. And they get together 4 times a year. So
okay.
There's a little trivia for you. As we take our only break of the hour, which will be quite short, when we come back, since we're done with our quiz, we're going to be talking about the broader context of having new words in the dictionary, how language changes, something called kid speak, and why more adults are using it. And we'll take your questions and comments, listeners. 844-295-TALK is the number to call, 844-295-8255. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. You can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. And if you're in Rochester, you can call 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Short break, more words and language discussions next. I'm Megan Mack. Friday on the Next Connections, the Rochester City School Board is set to vote Thursday evening on Superintendent Terry Dade's proposed cuts to staff. If they approve those cuts, that would mean 150 teaching positions would be eliminated in the district. Dade has defended his recommendation. What will board members say? We'll talk about the results of the vote. Then in our second hour, all things Star Wars. May the Force be with us. You're listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're doing our annual discussion about how language changes, new words in the dictionary, much, much more. My guests this hour are Maya Abtakian, an assistant professor in the Department of Linguistics at the University of Rochester, Amanda Chestnut, an artist, curator, educator, administrator, and Chris Fanning, director of communications for writers and books. And during our break, Chris, you mentioned one word that you wanted to talk about briefly.
Yes.
Another, not word of the year, but almost.
It's a runner-up, I think, for word of the year, and it is the word the. And so I was wondering if the other guests had found this in their research, in their studies for today's show, we all say, looking at each other, laughing. But this has to do with the Ohio State University looking to do a patent on their logo and branding, and so they were looking into patenting the word the.
The.
Yes. And apparently this has caused a spike in how often this word is looked up. And Merriam-Webster went on to explain how it's not completely out of the blue for very common words to have spikes, but to see this increase in the word the was kind of shocking for this year. So I was just interested to talk about that with the panel and how people see those. When we think of word of the year, we think of something that has context and meaning, and, you know, it stands for something, and the definition is colorful and full, and then you have the word the that's gotten up here. I mean, it'd be like the letter A. I don't know. Maya, what do you think?
I can't stop thinking about the patenting part.
I know!
And it's I'm reminded bananas. Of the fact that I think somebody tried to patent the word poke, like for the food.
Oh, okay.
Yes, a white person tried to patent the word poke. For the food.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
My vote for 2020 is Caucasity, by the way.
Caucasity.
Butch
As
Cassidy.
Your word of the year?
Yes, the word of the year, Caucasity. Which, to try to patent a word that comes from a BIPOC culture, would have to have Caucasity.
Would it be to caucasious do, to do that? Is that
it would be
would...
caucasious? Yes, I think that was.
Yeah, oh, I love this.
Okay, we've got Amanda's word of the year. All right, thank you. The phone is starting to ring.
Oh,
we're
God,
getting
thank
increasingly
God.
Silly. But back to Elaine's earlier question about on accident versus by accident. Our colleague Gary did some quick research for us. This is from Grammarist.com. It says, on accident versus by accident, the predisposition used with the word accident can be a touchy subject for some grammar purists. The traditional phrase is by accident. On accident is a variation found almost exclusively inside the U.S., similar to on purpose. One can either do something on purpose or on accident. So thank you, Elaine, for that question.
Yeah.
Up first on the phones this hour is Pam in Newark. Go ahead, Pam.
Hi, I'm a pop culture challenged, and I'm almost 70 years old, and this has been around for a while, several years, but it really irks me when I hear somebody say, oh, it was so fun, instead, because I learned it's so much fun.
Oh.
And I don't know where that comes from either.
That is completely foreign to me. I don't know. Maya? Okay.
Thanks, Pam. Chris is throwing it to Maya.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I am also looking at Maya. Yeah. This is...
Well, so I think that the use of fun as a predicative adjective is also new, right? So it was fun rather than it was a fun party. And in addition to that, now people can use the intensifier. So I think the change is with the intensifier so, actually, that so can just be used in the same way that really or very, super, it was super fun. That's another new-ish one. And intensifiers actually tend to be somewhere where there's a lot of turnover in language.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Pam. Thanks for that question. Up next on the phone is Tom in Pittsburgh. Go ahead, Tom.
Two questions. Really, one, my wife gets upset when we now say graduated college. We used to say always graduated from college or from high school. When did that change? I mean, that changed sometime or another.
Okay.
Maybe when college stopped being a place you actually had to go to. College isn't always a physical location anymore. Maybe it was easier to think about it that way when it stopped being a physical place all the time.
Interesting.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm interested by how many people are talking about changes in prepositions, either a different preposition or the loss of one, which I do think there are a number of ongoing changes in English that fall into that category, and they might be related.
Okay. Yeah. Tom, did you have a second question?
Yeah, it's a quite, in terms of the OED, do they relate to that? That's sort of the standard.
The Oxford English
World, isn't it? Yeah.
Are you saying, do they have a preference between the two dictionaries, or?
Well, that's sort of the standard for the world, isn't it? The Oxford English Dictionary.
I'm going to turn to Maya with your question.
The OED is usually my go-to, partly because it has the best etymology section of any of the dictionaries. So you can actually get all these questions that are coming up about things that have changed. You can get good information about what date things first appeared. You get good antonating from the OED.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for your question. I sent all of our guests an article prior to the show, something that Evan and I came across in our research, and it has something to do with kids speak. And the article is, if you want to look it up, it's called Why Grown-Ups Keep Talking Like Little Kids. It's a May article from The Atlantic by John McWhorter. And the tagline is, embracing your inner child is comforting and fun and just might revitalize the English language. And in it, he argues that adults are using more comforting language, adding Ys to things, the letter Y. An example he gives is that very popular sitcom, Blank Creek, Schutz Creek, if I can say it that way. One of the protagonists, he describes a game night that he and his sister have as yelly. People are yelling a lot, so he calls it yelly. And so McWhorter's saying that we're adding a lot of Ys, we're making language more kids-like, more comforting. He gives a couple more examples. And I want to ask our guests how they feel about that. Do you find comfort in using another example from that same show? Is another character was describing a man she briefly dated and described him as homelessly, which,
is reflective of the characters.
Is reflective, that's fair, Amanda, yes, reflective of the characters. Right. But the point is they're adding the Ys and things like that. Maya, why are we moving in this direction, do you think?
I'm not sure. First of all, the basic premise that it's going to revitalize English, I'm not at all worried about English. I think English is doing just fine. This is not one of the many languages in the world that's endangered. The other thing I think is, what he's pointing out is that he actually talks about a bunch of the groups that tend to lead language change. Women tend to lead language change. Minority groups tend to lead language change. Children lead language change as they pick up on it when they're acquiring language. I don't think this isn't a coincidence. These are people who, in a sense, have less to lose. That is, they have more flexibility in the language that they can use, right? Because people in power have more to lose and want their language to be the language of power as well. So I think that's kind of what he's getting at in some of that. Mm-hmm. I really like the why. Mm-hmm. Although the why in yelly is full of yells, right? Mm-hmm.
That's what it
and
yes, means
homeless
to me.
Yeah. Is kind of homeless.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. So those are two different whys, actually.
Yes. Okay, that's true. Yeah. That's true. He also says that, to quote him, quote, given the magnitude of recent social and political unrest, not seeing the upheaval reflected in language would have been surprising. Social media has only quickened the pace of change. He's saying because of all the economic turmoil that younger generations are going through, they're trying to make language more comforting.
Wow. Maybe that's true. To me, I think of it's more just culture and slang and changing words and not such an existential sort of, I need to be more comforted with my words. I don't know. I just see, to me, that seems like it's an overthink of explaining what's happening. That's just what I think. I don't know if you have an opinion, Chestnut, either way.
I don't know that there have been some surveys that say things like music tend to be more bubblegum and pop and sugary during really difficult times. Maybe culture, language, follows a similar path. That would be the kind of thing that would be better served by a historical survey than by looking at our current language, though, especially because our current language changes so much more quickly because we have so much more access to a wider variety of people than we used to.
Yeah, that's a great point. He also mentions the word, or adding the phrase to the end of things. So he
says, I'm incredibly guilty of this.
If you've noticed that, to convey emphasis or surprise, many young women have begun appending an to their sentences. No, move. It's for you.
Yep.
You do that, Chris?
Yes. I can speak for all those
young women and Chris
and Chris Fanning. His giant muscles. I mean, I've always, and this is something I picked up, I believe, from my family, is ugh, U-G-H at the end of stuff. Ugh, it was so ugh, or, you know, I don't want to do that. Ugh. So it's that, it's a more like emotional state than changing of the language, mm-hmm. I guess. I don't know.
Conveying emphasis.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that, Maya and Amanda? It is popular on that show, Schutt's Creek, too. There's a lot of mention of this show in the McWhorter article.
Yes.
He must be a fan.
He's a fan. Gotta be.
Stan.
He stands. It. Up next on the phone is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi. I found myself like neurologically, like viscerally responding to the notion of on accident, and I kind of gut checked myself and realized, oh, this I'm like inside of myself, I'm playing out the power dynamics that you were just referring to, this standard English versus this. You know, this democratic transformation of, you know, because I found myself persuaded, oh, you know, on accident, on purpose, there's an elegance there of just making it work better. But before, I've always just been, you know, clicking my tongue at that. So, but yeah, it's class-based. So what's your, you know, drill down a little bit maybe into the class aspect, the power differential and pressure from below, pressure from above. What's going on with that?
Okay. Thanks, John. So go ahead, Amanda.
Yeah. We stand, John.
Go ahead.
we stand. That's I agree completely. Language change rarely comes from the top. Mm-hmm. So if language is changing, then maybe we need to think about why before we react automatically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always say my ninth grade history teacher used to say that rich people don't emigrate. And to me, it's exactly the same phenomenon, right? Mm-hmm. The people who change language are the ones who don't have as much to lose, potentially. They can be free to be more creative. Mm.
I understand the value in standardizing certain things. Do you all feel like there should be more leeway when it comes to how we communicate, so that we're not prioritizing one group or another in settings like the workplace, in the education system? I mean, how do you find a balance between, you know, certain standards, grammatical principles, but also being open-minded enough about cultural differences? Amanda, I'm sure you've thought a lot about this question and conversations we've had off the air.
Yeah, I think that it's I think that it's really important that we take time to consider what our structures are and why. For example, I had a conversation on Facebook in the last couple months with several women who all admitted to using far too many exclamation marks in their emails because they were afraid of sounding angry or abrupt or dismissive. So they were including this thing that grammatically is incorrect in order to convey a particular behavior that might be seen as desirable in the workplace. So even something as simple as too many exclamation marks is something that people are very mindful of. And if we are being strict grammarians, we might frown upon. I think that, like John said, it's important to, John the caller said, that it's important to take some time to consider where the person you're conversing with is coming from. Mm-hmm. And consider if they are managing to clearly communicate with you and effectively communicate with you, then is it necessary to be upset or to challenge their way of speaking and communicating, or can you just continue that dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Maya, looking at it from a linguistics perspective, with all the work you do, where do you find the balance, or where do you think the balance should be?
I mean, it's very much what Amanda said. I think that you, there's no, I mean, as linguists, we know that there's no one form that's better than another, right? So what is seen as being standard language or a standard form in one language, say no double negatives in English, is standard in French and Spanish, right? You must have double negatives. So there's no inherent reason why some form is better than another form. And so just remembering exactly what Amanda said, right? The person that you're talking to is coming from a different place and may have different language variety, but that these are equally systematic from the point of view of language.
I think that's a great way to end the hour and end the year in a way with our conversation about language. But I can't let Chris and Maya go without sharing their word of the year. Because Amanda has given hers.
Mine
down to our last minute or so.
Mine isn't one that was on any list. I love this word. I love the mouthfeel of this word, if we can use that term. Tumultuous. I think that's a word that
really
describes me as a person.
Is that coming back for 2020?
It could, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll make it come back. Maybe I'll abbreviate it. I'm feeling tulmy.
Tumultude?
Tumultude? Well, check back in. Maybe it'll be the word of the year next year.
Mark this conversation.
Tumultuous.
Maya, how about you? Word of the year.
That's a hard choice. Mm. I love words. I don't want to pick one over the others.
Oh, we won't tell the others.
Please don't. So on the list, one of the ones I really liked was rewilding.
Rewilding.
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah, rewilding.
I like that.
Very good.
Good.
Well, another one in the books, team.
Ooh, wow.
Another year of words. We'll do this again in 2020 for sure. Maya Abtakian, Amanda Chestnut, Chris Fanning, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For always saying yes. It's a fun hour for us, and I hope our listeners have fun as well. Our thanks to Gary Puttup, helping us out on phones and research today. Rob Braden is our excellent engineer. Josephine Perini, our volunteer for today. Thank you for all of your work. I'm Megan Max, sitting in for Evan Dawson. Everybody, have a nice afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.